from Tukito LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight, after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again, without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs to 20 grams or less per day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds, and the incidental carbs you find in things like dairy. Moderate protein, scale to your lean body mass, and then fat to satiety. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. I'll be asking my guest each week what their keto looks like to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we can't give you medical advice. It's always best to work with your own doctor because they know you and your medical history and so have access to the bigger picture. This week's extraordinary GPs are Dr. Joe Pollitt and Dr. Lucy Burns. Joe is a GP originally from Canterbury in the UK, who's been living in Melbourne, Australia for over 7 years. She found the keto diet through her own personal frustration with weight management, having tried multiple diets in the past. She now enjoys applying low-carb principles in her practice and is excited by the changes she has already seen in multiple patients. Outside of work, Jo loves to keep active by doing a mixture of strength training, HIIT classes and lots of walking. She's a frustrated Broadway star and sings in a choir whilst waiting to be discovered. Lucy is a GP in Frankston, just south of Melbourne, Australia. She discovered keto, like many people, after years of yo-yo dieting. She found that as she got older, following the standard low-fat style of dieting was unsustainable and unsuccessful. Another doctor friend introduced her to keto and she was hooked. A year later, she opened her low-carb general practice clinic called Epiphany Medical Weight Loss. Her strong belief is to empower people to manage their health through nutrition and the low-carb way of living. When she isn't doctoring, Lucy lives with her husband, 2 teenage daughters, 2 dogs, 4 cats, 3 horses, 4 ducks, 3 frogs, a goat, and a miniature cow. Quite often, it seems that people struggle to see eye to eye with their GP when it comes to keto. Maybe other things too. Who better to ask for some advice about how to get the most out of the relationship with your GP, but a GP? Even better, 2 GPs. Hopefully you'll get some tips on how to be a better patient, as well as how to get the best medical care you can in the too often short appointment times available. Welcome, Joe and Lucy, to the Keto Women Podcast. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you, Daisy. How are you?
Well, I'm shockingly awful, actually. I've got a hideous cold, so that's why I sound a bit snotty and croaky. yeah,
no good.
As you can hear.
Hi, Daisy. How are you?
Very froggy. So hoping to get through this in one piece and with the listeners able to understand what I'm going on about. How are you, Lucy?
Yes, I'm really well, thanks. Just recover. We've had a lovely day here. It's spring and beautiful weather, and we have daylight savings now. So it's only just getting dark here at about 8 o'clock at night. So that's always good.
Nice. So yeah, we're on opposite sides of the globe, aren't we? So you're going into that nice longer days, and I'm doing the opposite, going into those awful dark nights coming in at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes. Luckily, it doesn't ever I think the earliest it gets dark is about 5:15 here, but I just try and pretend that I'm snuggling down for winter.
Yeah, well, there is that, I guess, but yes, I think the other end of the year is nicer. Looking forward to those warm summer nights. So you two have just been to a low-carb conference, is that right?
Yes, we did. We went to low-carb down under Gold Coast, which was awesome.
Yeah, it was fantastic. We had a great weekend. We got to meet a couple of other kick-ass keto bitches as well, and met some amazing...
Hi, Danielle.
And Erica.
Hi, Erica.
And met lots of other amazing, also GPs, some sports medicine physicians, some an obs and gynae consultant, and then some dietitians, naturopaths, exercise physiologists. It was just a really great place to be. So many different people who are just passionate about low carb. Just a really positive meeting.
And it sounds like a bit of a contrast. You mentioned just before we started recording, you went to a slightly different conference a bit before that.
We did. We went to a conference that I think both Joe and I thought we would be connected with, but the nutritional advice was vastly different from what we believe in. And so we felt a little isolated.
That's probably the best way to say it.
So I'm being a diplomat here.
Being very diplomatic, yeah.
A lot of holding your tongues.
Yes. I think they are probably just a little behind the time in science, and I'm not sure why they're not open to embracing this other way of eating when clearly there are so many benefits for so many people.
Yes, exactly. And like you say, it's that basis in science that you both must find interesting, and I know most of the community does as well.
Yeah. Oh, I think that there's just so much emerging research coming out around low carb and keto diets, and the amazing benefits it can have, not just for things like type 2 diabetes and weight management and PCOS, but also the anti-inflammatory properties of the diet and the effect, as you were talking about with Annette Bosworth the other week, on depression and migraines and all those sorts of things. I just think it's fascinating and exciting to see what might happen, you know, in the hopefully not too distant future with it.
Yes, I mean, the potential healing benefits is obviously going to be of interest to you both. I haven't mentioned yet, but that you're both GPs, and we thought it would be interesting to put a show together about how to talk to your GP and how to get on with them when you're living a keto lifestyle, because I know some people do run into problems with that.
I think for me, the thing that I really like about keto is that the science is there, and the biochemistry and physiology make sense. Whereas things like paleo, I support the whole concept, but to me, it doesn't scientifically make sense that you can still have maple syrup and honey and fruit, because that doesn't fit in. So whilst it fits in maybe as a historical, I guess, concept, I think the thing about keto is that it's just scientifically sound.
Yes, I think that's what a lot of people come across. You know, certainly the approach that I took when a friend of mine, Kirsten, first told me about keto, she backed it up with that science, and she said, you know, don't just take my word for it. Go and look at this information, and gave me links to various sites. And, you know, and that's what did it for me. And I think most people feel the same way. It's that sort of aha moment, isn't it? When you say, oh, yes, gosh, yes, that really
absolutely
does make sense.
I've had an epiphany.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A keto epiphany.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, this is kind of is jumping forward to what we're going to talk about, but the resources are there. The resources are available. But it's just getting that through to your doctor, getting it through to your GP, and making it available to them, making them aware of it. You know, it's not hard to find the information, but they have to be open to listening and reading to start off with.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are quite a few
members of the medical profession who have been changed by their patients. You know, someone who comes in and they see such a dramatic improvement and find out what they're doing, and it's that gets them to investigate and changes their whole approach. And obviously, you know, the ripple effect from a GP in a community is huge. So, you know, getting on well with your GP and hopefully getting them to see your point of view is going to be a really good thing to do, isn't it? So let's hear first, though, a little bit about each of you and, you know, what your backgrounds are. Jo, let's start with you.
So I guess I came to keto having, as most of us have, battled with my weight for most of my life. Was your classic yo-yo dieter, probably for the last 20 years or so. And when I look back, I've done everything, you know, every possible low-calorie, ridiculous diet. And when I look back over the years, the only times I've ever really lost any weight is when I've been low carb of some description. Not always low carb, high fat. I have done low carb, low fat, which was the worst thing I've ever done. But the low carb way of eating has definitely made me feel better generally. And I really got serious about keto in March this year. I was feeling really low down about my weight and just frustrated not being able to lose any weight, even though I was, you know, on your 1200 calories and exercising all the time and all the classic things, which I now know are counterproductive, not helpful, and ultimately probably have messed up my metabolism more than anything else. And my kind of personal epiphany moment, sorry to steal your name,
that's okay,
Lucy.
It's a great name.
was reading Gary Taub's Why We Get Fat and What to Do About It. And it was just this, I know other people have said that on this podcast, but it was just this kind of moment where, you know, I came to realize it wasn't my fault and everything that I'd been taught was wrong. And when I read that book, I changed immediately. And not just in what I was eating. I was already eating kind of low carb-ish, but I wasn't very strict. But it was more so my attitude towards myself, and recognizing the power that food had over me. And that it wasn't my fault, so to speak, that I couldn't control my appetite. So that was, you know, that was a real eye opener to me. And that, like I just say that book basically changed my life. And it's really since then that I just don't find it hard now to stick to low carb, high fat. You know, it's probably one of the easiest things I've ever done. As you know, you don't get cravings anymore. Your appetite's, you know, completely reduced. And this is all still with me exercising regularly. I don't have any problems exercising. I'm not, you know, that I have heaps of energy. I sleep well generally. So it's just been the biggest revelation to me. And then because I had such good results myself, I couldn't unsee it, so to speak. So I had to start applying it to my patients. So I'm just gradually building up within my practice that I work in at the moment, seeing my own patients are getting referrals from other GPs within the practice. And then I've also had a few people come from the Low Carb Down Under website who found me on there. And it's just the best feeling because I'd say 99% of people have such great success. That the consultations are just so nice. You know, it's just so different than my other GP work. Everyone is happy. Everyone is just amazed that they found this way of eating that is so easy. They don't have the sugar cravings. They don't have the problems with their appetite. They can, you know, pretty much go all day without having to eat if they have to, and they just love it. So it's just it's really changed my practice, and I can't see myself going back.
And yes, makes your job a bit easier by the sounds of it.
Well, easier and more enjoyable. You know, it can be quite, you know, we see a lot of, as GPs, we see a lot of mental health patients, complex social issues. And then, you know, just your run-of-the-mill coughs and colds and that sort of thing. And it can be quite hard, you know, you get a lot of transference from patients. And so having an outlet and having an interest and a passion about something different has just made going to work that little bit more enjoyable, I guess. You know, you can really make a difference to someone's life.
And you haven't always been in Australia either.
No, that's right.
And certainly listeners will probably pick up that you've got that slight mixed accent going on there. But
I'm trying to hide my acquired Australian twang, which I'm not always a fan of. Sorry, Lucy. No, I'm from the UK originally. Moved out here about 7 years ago and originally came for 2 years and obviously have decided to stay for a bit longer. So I was a GP partner back in the UK, did all my training in London and the southeast of England, and then moved out here and I'm, yeah, it's just a different lifestyle, different way of working in some ways, but, you know, similar enough that it wasn't too much of a challenge.
I was going to ask you actually if there's you know, a real marked difference between being a GP in the UK and in Australia?
Not, I mean, the patients are the same, the problems are the same, the issues are the same. It's just, you know, the system is slightly different. So that's the only major thing that takes a bit of getting used to. As you know, in the UK, healthcare is publicly funded, so it's all funded by the NHS, so it's free at point of service. Whereas in Australia, we do have Medicare, which is the government system. But it's sort of alongside that there's a private system as well. So GPs will either can work privately, but there's a Medicare rebate for each attendance by patient. So it's kind of slightly different, and you know both systems have their pros and cons. So it's yeah.
Yes, it's quite similar here in France. Actually, it tends to be there's this percentage around about two-thirds that everyone gets as part of like a sort of typical insurance, I guess, but it's part of when you work or if you don't work, you can have access to it. Everyone has access to free healthcare, and then you pay a top-up insurance, you know, depending on your job. And again, if you're on low income, you can access 100% free healthcare. But it sounds like a kind of similar system to the one you have in Australia.
It's very similar. Yeah, it works in a slightly different way, but it's very similar. Yeah.
And what about you, Lucy? Tell us a bit about you.
Oh, well, I was also a yo-yo dieter. I think started my first diet at 16. Probably wish I was that weight now. It's amazing, isn't it? You think you're overweight when you're 16 and you're really not. But I think that
it's dreadful, isn't it? When you remember how you felt at that age looking at yourself, and then you look back at pictures now and you think, oh, my goodness.
But, you know, I think it was a product of the living growing up in the late 70s and 80s. That was when the low-fat message came out. That was when Elle Macpherson hit the TV screen. You know, initially she was promoting Tab Cola. And, you know, I just vividly remember all the ads for skinny milk, and it was all very anti-fat and fat everywhere, you know, low-fat, low-fat. So yeah, I was a child of the low-fat era and carried it right through to my 20s, 30s and 40s. And anyway, last year or about 18 months ago, I was probably the heaviest I'd ever been, including when I was, you know, 9 months pregnant. And I'd just given up. I'd decided that, you know, I was a middle-aged woman. I was just going to have to go and buy my clothes at the middle-aged lady shops, and I would get rid of all my skinny clothes. And so I'd bundled them all up, but in my usual style, hadn't quite got to the op shop yet, and went on holidays with a girlfriend of mine, and I saw her with our families, and she looked fantastic. And I said, "Oh, Jo, what have you been doing?" And she said, "Oh, I'm doing this low carb thing." And my immediate thing was, "What? No fruit? I'm not doing that." And but I just kept thinking about her because she looks so great, and I just so because we were all holidaying, I just sort of edged my way in, I guess, and considered the possibility that maybe, you know, life without fruit or bread wasn't the end of the world. And then I think because we had so much time, I started doing research and like Jo, you just suddenly I just was hooked. And I thought, oh, my God, this is like the missing piece I've been looking for. So that was my epiphany moment. And in between all of this, I had been sort of going through phases of, you know, healthy, in quotes, eating. And, you know, for to work, I'd dutifully take my frozen mango with my, you know, sugar-free muesli stuff and some low-fat yogurt, and I'd eat this enormous bowl of it and still be a bit hungry, but just think, oh, well, that's it. And so then when I wasn't losing any weight, I was feeling really ripped off because here I am, you know, eating muesli. And then I think once weight started moving with keto, but I could still eat, you know, every meal, I just thought, oh, my God, I felt like I was sort of in heaven. I was eating bacon and eggs and mushrooms in butter and butter at galore, and I just couldn't believe that you could lose weight and eat these amazing meals. So I guess then to carry on, I was working, I had a different job. It was an extremely toxic environment, and it whilst keto was brilliant, it wasn't, I still needed to revisit my holistic health, I think, to work out what was happening, which I did. And then I worked out I really needed to leave this job, and, which I did. And then I so I was working for Defence, which was I'd been there for a long time. It was a very comfortable job, but the environment had just become quite toxic. And I decided that I really wanted to just bang on about keto, to tell you the truth. I just loved it. I loved everything about it. I'd read everything. I couldn't get enough of it. I just wanted to feel that I could, you know, tell the world about it. And I couldn't believe that I was in this position where I had a science background, where I had sort of some credibility behind me, and that I could actually get paid to tell people about this. It was like an amazing opportunity. And so then I sort of I opened my business, which is called Epiphany Medical Weight Loss, reflecting, of course, my own personal epiphany.
Fantastic.
And it's been going really well. And it's kind of, you know, I spend a lot of time talking about keto and low carb because I really believe that it is the foundation. But I also think it's one piece of the puzzle, and the other things also need to be, you know, addressed. In particular, sleep and I guess mental health, how you feel about yourself, and I think that is really important. Keto helps with that. It helps with your cravings. It stops you feeling like a failure. But you know, I think you need to go the holistic approach. And so to me, that works brilliantly.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree with that. Keto is a big part of the puzzle, isn't it?
But yes.
For a lot of people, it just, there are still those missing pieces.
Yeah, I think for some people, they think, oh, it's a panacea. All I have to do is do this and everything will be fine. And for some people, that's true. But for a lot of people, weight is so tied up with how we feel about ourselves. And particularly if you've been overweight for a long time, there's a lot of, I guess, reversal of that self-image that needs to occur.
Yeah, so true.
Absolutely. And I think particularly with women, I mean, I know men have issues too. I will admit to that. But I think we have so many things tied up that need unraveling and unpacking and sorting out.
Yes, yes. It's certainly not as simple as, well, you know, eat less, move more.
Oh, gosh, yes, that that awful phrase that gets thrown out in the UK a lot.
Ah.
Okay, so having two friendly GPs in the same place at once, I can take the opportunity to grill you a bit and get some tips about how to get the most out of your GP and really improve that relationship. I'm very lucky, actually. I have a very good relationship with the same GP I've seen since I first arrived in France, so about 15 years now. He's fantastic. He goes way over his allotted time with all his patients, which the downside of that is that you can end up waiting in his surgery for 2 hours to see him. But you do know that when you're in there, you get his full attention for as long as you need. So I can't sing his praises enough.
And I think that's one of the great parts about being a GP is you get to know your patients really well. And you see, I've got one family where I think I see about five generations of the same family. So you can really put things into context. It's just interesting. It's really interesting. But also it makes it easier, as a GP, if you're seeing your GP regularly, and you stick to the same doctor, it makes it easier for both of you because you don't have to start from the beginning every time. If you have a new problem, at least they know your history. They know a bit about you.
Exactly. And they're more likely to be able to get much faster to a solution because they've got that whole context there,
yeah,
haven't they?
That's right.
So I guess then to a certain extent, it might be slightly different depending whether you've been seeing your GP regularly for a long time or you're starting with a new one. But how should someone broach the subject of going keto and get their doctor on side? Because, we know from talking to people in the community that's often a bit of a sticking point, that they get told by their doctor that it's not a good idea and they have to kind of, get a bit sneaky and go behind their backs. And it would be really nice, wouldn't it, to be able to work with your GP, because ultimately they're interested in your health and well-being and you need their help. So, I think it would be nice to just try and get some advice out there to really build that relationship into something as strong as possible.
So we were talking, Joe and I have been talking about this, and we thought that certainly coming along with some research is good, very good. It depends a little bit on where the research is from. So you can't just print off a list of top 10 tips for keto on Google. But in particular, I think if you can find some other doctors in your country, like we've got in Australia, we've got a number of prominent sort of doctors that are advocating low carb, and certainly in the UK, there's David Unwin and plenty in the States. I think that just adds a bit of credibility to your proposal for low carb, is that if the doctor thinks that, well, there's other doctors doing it and this isn't just some crazy thing that you've picked up off from, the internet under some sort of, lose 10 kilos in 5 minutes, then they're much more likely to be open. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I think that's true. Being able to provide examples of other places that it's been used and other people who have been treating patients with a low carb diet is really, really helpful. Alongside, bringing some summaries of some research papers, just some easy to read info, bearing in mind that most GPs, especially in the UK, don't have a lot of time to sort of spend reading when you're in the room. Obviously, if they're prepared to read in their own time, that's great. But, there are time pressures and they'll probably have, 20, 30 other patients to see that day. So if you can provide something that's really concise, easy to read, you're more likely to gain their interest and support. And the other thing to say is, particularly in the UK, David Unwin has prepared an excellent video seminar on prescribing low carbohydrate diets in type 2 diabetes, which is available to all GPs. I've done it myself, to all UK GPs, that is. It might be available to others as well, I'm not sure, but it's a really quick and easy way to understand the science and the basis and the reasons why we would want to prescribe a low carbohydrate diet for type 2 diabetes. At the moment, that's the only condition it's been recommended for officially in the UK, but I think at least it will be able to, you can use that to make your GP sort of aware that it is actually becoming accepted practice.
Yes, and he's a great example, actually. When I was at the London conference earlier this year, he gave a fantastic presentation, and he is one of these doctors who had his mind changed from a patient who challenged him when they were speaking to him about not eating sugar anymore. And he was questioning it, I think, in relation to other carbohydrates like bread, for example. And it was the patient who said to him, well, you know, all starches are glucose molecules. That's linked right. together. And that yes. was his moment for him. And it suddenly yeah. switched his thinking. And Absolutely. now look what he's doing. He's an absolute leader in the UK. He really is.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely one of my idols now. But yeah.
He is.
Joe's got a number of idols.
I have got some idols, yeah. I'm not ashamed.
It's easy to have. There are lots to choose from. But yes, it's very impressive what's going on in the UK at the moment. They seem to really be starting to make yeah. very large strides forward.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think the US has got some really good people leading the charge there. And also in Australia, we're just, you know, we're still a bit behind the times in terms of the kind of government support, so to speak, but it's, you know, it's slowly changing. And, you know, with the recent Gary Fetke APRA apology, that's kind of, I think, made all of us as doctors in Australia probably more comfortable in recommending low carb diets. I think there was a time there where, you know, it was still a bit of a nerve-wracking thing to sort of go out on a limb and try, you know, suggest this, you know, weird and wacky diet, which we know is not a weird and wacky diet. But, you know, without having had all of that kind of hanging over us, now that that's kind of gone, it really does allow us to kind of open up our practice and start to recommend it to more patients.
Yes, because you can't blame doctors for not wanting to basically put their career at risk, which like you say, before this turnaround with Gary Fetke was a real threat, you know, hanging over you.
Absolutely. And I think it's not just your career, it's your income, your livelihood. You know, we've got families to support, and as a GP, if you're told you can't recommend, you know, you can't practice, like, even I don't know what I would do if they said you can't advise patients about diet. I'd be thinking, huh, that's so integral to what we do.
Exactly. So I think it's a great point, just coming back to what you said to start with, Lucy, about finding other doctors who are doing the same thing in the country wherever you are, because it shows that it is possible to be giving that advice. It gives them some information, and it also potentially gives them somebody to talk to about, somebody to ask questions.
Yeah, you know, a mentor.
On their level in the same context.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. And look, we're really blessed in Australia. We have Rod Taylor, who is, you know, part of Low Carb Down Under, and he's so generous with his time, and he likes to, you know, hook all the doctors up together so we can all natter and brainstorm and workshop any issues we've got, and it, you just feel very well supported in a very collegiate environment. And I think ultimately it means that any other doctors who are wanting to step their toe into the water have a supportive environment to do so.
Yes, and I think that that will make all the difference. We were talking a bit before, Joe, about some different, they do apply to keto, but some general tips for how to get the most out of your appointment when you do go to your GP. As we know, they're often very short. So perhaps you'd like to talk a bit about that.
Yeah. Well, we were talking a bit about how we can, how patients can make the best of their time with their GP, however long that might be. You know, we talked about how in the UK, yes, you're pretty time limited. Australia, we can be a bit more, generous with our time, and we can book longer appointments, that sort of thing. I'm not sure about the US system, so I can't comment on that and anywhere else in the world. But I think one of the main things that I suggest to patients, regardless of whether it's about keto or anything else, is, you know, writing down a list of your problems, even, you know, symptoms ideally, not diagnoses, but, you know, writing down your symptoms, writing down your questions, and even go to the point that you give it to the doctor when you go into the room so they can actually have a look and a read, because what you feel might be the most important question or the most important symptom might not be the most important thing on that list. So it's just a really good way of kind of structuring the consultation and making sure that you're both covering the important things to both of you, basically. I think as GPs, one of the things we often grumble about is a patient will come with one problem, one, you know, symptom, one thing that they want to get sorted out, and then after their 10-15 minutes they'll be, oh, by the way, and it's something else which is actually probably more important, you know, maybe life-threatening, more significant, and we just don't have the time to devote to it. So if we can see from the beginning what we're trying to deal with in that consultation, that can be really, really helpful, and you will probably come away from your appointment feeling much more listened to and fulfilled. So that's definitely one key piece of advice.
Yes, that I would agree. Suggest. I think a lot of patients come in with the list and apologise for it. Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Lucy, I've got the list today. And I go, great, bring it on. Because I also can get waylaid. You know, you get to sort of go down one rabbit hole and then realise that you haven't addressed all their problems. And I think that that's then dissatisfying for both parties.
Yeah. And I think going in and actually telling the doctor what you're worried about. I don't know in Australian training, but in UK training, we always were taught to talk about ideas, concerns and expectations. You know, as in what is the patient's ideas, what are their concerns and what are their expectations from the consult. So if you can actually give us those, that can be really helpful and allow us to address those problems, because we don't want to be saying, you know, we want to be able to allay your fears if it's something that you're worried about, answer the appropriate questions and not just address our own agenda. Do you have that? I don't know if you have that in Australian. I mean, I'm sure you do. It's a similar sort of thing, but yeah.
Not back in the last millennia when I did my training, but
in the olden days.
Yeah, in the olden days, pre-internet. But I think I think it's really important that you do feel listened to by your GP, and sometimes you may not feel listened to, and it may just be that it's a bad day, it's extra busy, there were some emergencies squashed in, you know, they'll be stressed. But if time and time again you're going and you're not feeling that your needs are being met, or they're not listening to you, or they're dismissing you, then time to find a new GP.
Absolutely. And I've always said that, vote with your feet. If you're if you're not happy with the outcome in you know, over the course of a few consultations or even one consultation, if you don't have the rapport, then there's no harm in finding another doctor. In Australia, you're very lucky in that you can go anywhere. You can see any GP anywhere you like. The UK, you're kind of limited by location and postcode and that sort of thing. So it makes it a bit more difficult, but you do have some room to manoeuvre. Even if it's just another GP in the practice, you know, just going to speak to someone else, get a different point of view, you know, that's absolutely perfectly valid, and you will never offend a doctor by doing that. Well, I say that you wouldn't offend me by doing that, but
or me.
You know, it's perfectly understandable. There are definitely going to be patients that do not click with me, and I'm quite happy if they're happier seeing a different GP. I understand that completely, because I'm the same. So don't never feel obliged to keep seeing the same GP just because that's who you've been seeing for X number of years.
Yeah, so when do you know that it's time to call it a day? I mean, I can see it with the, so if you're starting with a new doctor and you don't feel that rapport, then yes, it makes sense to try a different one. If it's someone you've been working with and you've been getting along quite well with, and all of a sudden when you start telling them what you've been doing with keto and they look aghast and they start trying to tell you to stop doing it, how far do you push that? You know, we've already mentioned you can give them some summaries, you can give them some names of other doctors who are doing it. But, you know, when do you know when it's time to say, okay, this relationship is just not going to work, I'm going to have to try with somebody else? Because, you know, potentially you're going to have those same problems all over again. So I always think, especially if you've got on well before, it's obviously going to be worth pushing it as far as you can to see if you can get them around to your way of thinking.
I think that I would ask, as a patient, I would ask them what are they worried about? And it's going to be cholesterol. They're never worried about the low carb. The low carb bits are given. It's the high fat that is what worries doctors. And I think, and again, that's years of indoctrination of, you know, you must, LDLs cause heart cardiac disease, and you must lower your saturated fats, and you must lower your cholesterol. And so I think that that's, you know, that's a hard thing for, you know, I remember even myself trying to challenge that. I'm thinking, for 25 years, I've been learning all about statins. I've been learning all about how LDL would cause, you know, cardiac disease and heart attacks, and, you know, and yeah, you're telling me that that's not quite right. And it took a while. Like, it really did. What about you, Joe? Did you think that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a difficult thing to overcome, because that's what we're taught, and that's what's still being taught, is that, you know, high cholesterol is bad. And that, you know, you're going to drop down dead from a heart attack if your LDL's over a certain number and all that sort of thing. And I think that is definitely, I agree, it's one of the hardest things to overcome when you're talking to a doctor who doesn't know about the benefits of low carbohydrate diets. That's the battle you're going to be up against. I think the key thing, though, is when you're considering whether to sort of keep seeing that doctor or not, is whether they're actually open to listening to a different point of view and supporting you, you know, trying the diet. And sometimes the actual, all you need to do is show them the benefits. You know, is often we talk about N equals one all the time, and for some patients that's what it has to be. You know, you have to just experiment on yourself, prove to your doctor that it's improving for your, you know, your HbA1c, or it's making you lose weight, or it's your cycles come back if you've got PCOS. You know, there are in some ways you kind of might have to go out on a limb a little bit and prove to them that it is improving other things. And the cholesterol side of things is, you know, less important. That's going to be the biggest uphill battle, though, I think. But I think just trying to keep encouraging your doctor to be open to letting you try something new is the key. And if they're not open to it, then that's probably a good sign that it's time to find someone else.
I think that's a very good point that you made, Lucy, about asking them what they're worried about. So just like you going as a patient, trying to give the right information, is finding out from them the right information, finding out what their problems are with it. So, you know, potentially you can give them answers. And I think that's, you know, that's also a very good point, Joe, that you made about whether they're open to thinking about it. And it's just that really classic where are they looking interested?
Yeah.
I mean, that was certainly what I noticed with my GP, that he was interested.
Yeah.
So, okay, that sounds interesting. You know, tell me a bit more. Well, that's a great sign, isn't it?
And there's a whole spectrum of personalities and interest in general practice. And I've met GPs who just want to just prescribe, and you know, that's all they want to do. Whereas I'm the opposite. I want to de-prescribe. You know, you're gonna find people who are somewhere along that spectrum, and you know, hopefully closer towards mine and Lucy's end of it is, you know, what you ideally want to find. But there are people who are going to be in the middle and not sure, and but might be a bit interested and might be supportive. So, you know, I think just being open, talking about it, not hiding what you're doing from your doctor is probably safest as well. Because there might be, you know, there are certain medications that can be risky to take when you're eating a low carb diet. So it's really important to talk to your doctor about that, because it might be that you need medications changed. It can be dangerous. You know, there's certain diabetic medications that we know shouldn't be prescribed if you're following a ketogenic diet. So being open, being honest. But like I say, if they're really not supportive, then that's, move on.
Yeah.
Yes, because like you say, it is so important, isn't it, to have that person overseeing what you're doing when, you know, we see such dramatic changes in a short period of time with particularly type 2 diabetics. But yeah, if they're on medication, they're going to need to be adjusting that
absolutely
quickly as they're changing quickly. And not to do so could be very, very dangerous. So it's crucial.
It's a safety issue.
To
definitely
have that support.
And I think my other thing I always think about is as a patient, if a patient comes to me and they're vegan, vegan's not a diet that I advocate by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think it's, advertised or promoted as being the healthiest diet, but it's not, because you can't get everything you need without supplements. So if you can't get everything you need without supplements, therefore it can't be a complete diet. But having said that, if somebody is determined to be a vegan for whatever reason, then, you know, who am I not to support them in that? I will, if it's not helping their health, I may, you know, suggest some alternatives, but I would never tell them that I would never try and belittle them, which I think is what happens to some people when they go to their doctor about low carb. They sort of get made to feel like they don't know what they're doing, or that they're putting their lives at risk, or that they're being foolhardy. And again, I guess if your doctor makes you feel like that, you don't even need to give them another chance, because that should never happen.
Yes, exactly. That was a time actually where I made a very quick decision about changing my doctor back in the UK many, many years ago, where I went to discuss real problems with my weight and depression, I believe. It's such a long time ago, I forget exactly why I went. But yes, he was very dismissive and quite unkind. And, you know, and I was literally on the phone to my mum in tears, saying, I can't, you know, what do I do? You know, I went to someone for help, and now I'm a sniveling wreck. And she worked in the university, and she worked with a different doctor, and she phoned them, and she got me an appointment with him, and he was the GP I stayed with until I left the UK, and he was fantastic. So yes, I think you're absolutely right. If someone's making you feel bad like that, it's a good indication that you should
change. And I think it's a bit of a switch, you know, in the olden days, medicine was very paternalistic. You know, it was like, you know, don't worry, I'll look after you, dear. You just do what I say and everything will be okay. And that's got problems for both people. It disempowers one person and puts all the responsibility onto another person. And it really needs to be about a partnership and, you know, at the end of the day, patients need to take responsibility for their health, and we need to take responsibility for providing them the best advice we can and supporting their choices ultimately.
It's true. And what is funny, one of the most common things I hear from people is, you're going to tell me off for this. And I say to them, have I ever told you off about anything? You know, this is your life. This is not my life. I'm just here to help facilitate your medical care. You know, I'm not here to tell you off. Obviously that's a bit of a reflection of how they're feeling about themselves. But I like to sort of reflect it back to them so that they're made aware that, it's not my job to tell them off, you know, it's my job to support them. I think that's a really important part of the GP patient relationship, because you can't solve all of their problems. There's no way that you can solve every single medical problem that they have, or social problem, or whatever. You just have to do your best to support them with each thing, but make them realize that it's actually their life and their responsibility to look after their own health to a certain extent. You know, you can't hold everyone's hand through everything.
And how do you feel about, you touched on this earlier, with going with a list of symptoms, not a diagnosis?
Mm.
And I'll put my hands up. I've been completely guilty of this, of going along to my GP and say, well, I've been reading on the internet and this very much happened with when I changed my thyroid medication, and I drove the change by, you know, telling him about the website I'd been looking at, the book I'd been reading. But I did go along with tying that in with, well, these, you know, these are my symptoms. I still have these symptoms with T4. I've been reading that you can test for T3 and maybe start treating that. And he ordered some tests and we ended up treating it that way. But there's a balance, isn't there, between people asking Dr. Google what the problem is and coming up with some far-fetched and coming in convinced that they have some kind of condition that is very unlikely. But then there's also this wealth of information out there and this community that we know and love who are helping and treating themselves. Often, you know, by that information that's out there on the internet, and I know it's not all perfect, but it's definitely something that's had a massive impact on me. So how do you find that with people coming to you, and how do you strike the balance? I can see how it can be irritating on one side, but also on the other, it being quite useful that your patients are taking an interest and doing some research and finding out a bit more information for themselves.
I personally think that if you toddle in with a diagnosis, what you're almost doing is denying the GP the opportunity to see you as a whole first, because sometimes they can get waylaid by that too, because at the end of the day, they're people. If you go in and go, look, I've got this thing, I've looked it up and I've got blah, blah, they might go, oh, okay, and they'll be looking at that, at just sort of down that focused lens. Whereas I think the thing with general practice is that it is general. So we start wide and we go look at the symptoms as a whole and narrow it down last.
Yeah. But I think the balance, so the kind of the other side of that is addressing what the patient's concerns are. So yes, it can actually be quite useful sometimes if someone has looked something up on Google and they're worried that it's this, then
you can
kind of say, oh yeah, well that's a reasonable diagnosis to think about or consider or look into a bit further. But yeah, Lucy's right in that as doctors, we're trained to look at the symptoms and the signs. You know, we're essentially we're problem solving. We're looking for patterns. So if we don't have all of that information, and we're just given, you know, a snapshot of one part of the problem, then it does make it a lot harder to work out what the correct kind of path for investigations is, or even the diagnosis and treatment. So fine to have had a look and have tried to have an idea of what's going on, but it's also helpful, like I say, for us to have all of the information as well.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's your job at the end of the day. It's for you to have all the information laid out in front of you and to come up with something. But I find it interesting what you say about actually what it can tell you about the person who's coming to you has decided that, you know, perhaps they've decided they've got brain cancer because they're getting migraines.
Mm.
And, you know, that in itself could indicate, you know, a number of things. You know, perhaps a relative of theirs has had issues. Perhaps they know of somebody. You know, why are they going down the track they've chosen with that Absolutely. Diagnosis? Perhaps they're an overly anxious person, or, you know, presumably yeah. actually just the process that they've gone through can help inform you and can help become one of those symptoms that you put into the bigger picture.
And it might even be that the issue, so then let's say they've come with a headache, for example, that might not even be the issue that is at the root of it all, you know, their anxiety about another family member's health or something else that's going on in their life, stress at work. When you actually dig into why, you know, what's happening, you can actually find out the root cause of their symptoms. And that is always going to be not easier to treat, but, you know, that's ultimately going to help you treat them in the correct way and manage their illness in the correct way. Because if you didn't ask them, for example, about, you know, have you got any stress at the moment? How are you sleeping? What's happening at home? We talk about, you know, I've mentioned earlier in our training, but we talk about in our training looking at the psychosocial aspects of a patient. So it's a holistic approach, basically. A patient is not just their physical symptoms. They have, you know, social symptoms. They have psychological symptoms. And it all is so interconnected that if you just focus on the biological symptoms like the headache, you're never going to treat them fully. You know,
And I think that's the lure of the prescription pad. You can write something to fix the symptom. You can do that in about a second. Like, that's the easy way out. So when people come out of a consult without a prescription, sometimes they feel disappointed. But in fact, the easiest thing to do is write a script.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it comes back again to this being open and curious and taking a holistic approach. If you come up against that paternalistic type, who we're seeing less and less of, it has to be said, but, you know, they're the person who has all the answers. They're the person who gets cross if you've been looking at Google, because that's not your place. You know, I have the answers. I know best. And certainly, you know, I do know people come up against this when they go along, especially talking about keto, where it just completely gets shut down. Mm. So it's just, again, like you said before, it's often a personality thing. But I do think we're moving away. I can remember reading an article a while back just about this whole change in patients with the internet and you know, how some GPs were getting annoyed because people were coming in with these diagnoses. But then others, like you two, were saying it just, you know, it shows a different side, and it presumably, you know, the more knowledgeable and the more active your patient is in their healthcare, the more open they're going to be taking on board your advice and healing themselves. And, you know, that's what you're there for at the end of the day.
Oh, absolutely. And I love it now when patients have gone on the, like, the Diet Doctor website and they come in and they, you know, they've read something and we can discuss it. You know, they are empowered to look after their own health. It really does help with that. You know, that, as we've said, there's so many resources out there that are available, that I think, you know, that it plays an important role in lots of patients' care, definitely.
Yes, and we'll put some links to some helpful resources in the show notes, some pointers about things you could print out to take along to your GP if you need that kind of backup.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic talking to you both today, and I wish all GPs were like you. it would make it easier for the rest of us. But I do feel like it might be moving that way. It seems like more people, certainly the conference I was at in London, there were lots of GPs attending, and they were definitely of the open and curious bent. So,
and I, you know, I think we've met quite a few at the Low Carb Gold Coast conference the other weekend, which just, and not just GPs, other, you know, medics as well, other specialties. And it just does kind of show us that the whole thing is growing slowly, but it's growing, and it's just great to have the support of other doctors and other healthcare professionals.
Yes.
And that's a good point, actually, that something that maybe to recommend to your GP, especially if there's a conference not too far from them.
Absolutely.
Is to say, hey, you know, there's this conference coming up. Why, you know, think about attending. I know certainly at Keto Fest, the dudes have an offer for anyone in the medical profession, normally on the Science Sunday, that they can come on at a greatly reduced ticket price. They really encourage anyone from the medical profession to come in and hear their colleagues basically talking science, because it's presumably it's going to be the best way to sway them if they've got their doubts.
And all of, you know, for all of the Low Carb Down Under videos are available on YouTube. Can watch them anytime. They're all there for free, so they're you know, really easy to watch. So most of them are only sort of 20 to 30 minutes long, so you know, you can sit down in the evening with your glass of wine or whatever and watch some YouTube videos.
All your idols,
another
Joe.
Fantastic resource.
All my idols, yes. That's right, yeah.
But no, I think I like the two keto dudes thing of their sort of motto of, you know, if every person can convert one other person, you'll get the ripple effect. And I guess, I mean, for us, it's about also, you know, if every GP could convince one other GP, then the health profession revolution would occur. So certainly I know Jo's done her best to get her clinic colleagues on board with a presentation, and I'll be up for that towards the end of the year at my clinic. So the more the better.
Mm.
Yes, that's a great point, actually, isn't it? If every GP can convert another GP, that's going to have a profound change. Perhaps you could leave us with a top tip.
Well, it's kind of not a tip, and I think it's probably something that's been talked about before, but I've kind of got this mantra at the moment, both for myself and for my patients, that's progress, not perfection. You know, everyone is so worried about getting the exact right macros and making sure that everything is 100% perfect, when in reality, we know that life is never going to be 100% perfect. Things are going to happen. But, you know, doing the best you can, sticking to the low carb keto way of eating, you know, even if it's 90% of the time, 80% of the time, you're going to be winning. So I think that's a really important thing to have in the back of your mind. I definitely try to apply it to myself, because I can definitely be a bit prone to being derailed if I've just had one slip up. So I'm really, really trying to focus on just being as consistent as possible.
Yes, me too. And that it reminds me of what you said earlier about, you know, certain patients saying to you, oh, you're going to tell me off.
Mm.
And some people would rather just carry on. And like you're saying, that people get derailed. It's that, it's the shame and the guilt that can really derail. And I've seen people in my Facebook group, for example, who've, you know, who've wanted to leave the group for, because they felt embarrassed, because they've, you know, they've gone off plan for a while because something's happened in their life that, and yeah, they've turned to that old emotional crutch and they've felt ashamed and they felt guilty and they, you know, they're worried about speaking up about that for, you know, for fear of people shouting at them for cheating or whatever. I mean, it's always better to talk about it, isn't it? And
absolutely,
and try and find a way through it and to get help and support with getting back on board.
Yeah, and we're all human, you know, we all go through things, and there's going to be reasons why you can't stick to keto strictly, you know, but the key is, as I say to my patients, is just getting back to it as soon as you can. Whether that's tomorrow, whether that's next week, just, you know, get back into it. And eventually you'll get back to where you were before. It's just, it's a process. The thing, you know, we've all been through years of yo-yo dieting and emotional eating and in some ways food, you know, for some people food is so tied up with emotions that those feelings of guilt around food are just so hard to break and get rid of. So I think not feeling, I hate it when I see those posts on the Facebook group, because my heart breaks for those people, because they just, you know, there's nothing to be guilty about, there's nothing to feel ashamed of. We all understand, we've all been there, but you know, the fact that you're there and recognizing what's happening is the first step in improving. So, you know, just don't give up.
Exactly, that's a good point, actually. It's perfect indication that you're making progress.
Yes.
Yes, I love it. Progress, not perfection. How about you, Lucy?
Mine is of a similar ilk. My top tip is that long-term weight management requires a multifaceted approach. Keto is a huge part of that puzzle, but it's not the whole puzzle. And I think attending to, particularly if you're falling off the wagon and you're having trouble climbing back on, just work out, you know, what's going on, what other things are going on in your life to stop you getting back on the wagon. Because, you know, once you're on, it's fantastic. It's, you know, great. But sometimes just that little step back on, there's something holding you back. Whether it's just that you're tired, that you're stressed, that you're not sleeping properly, that, you know, there's some other emotional thing, work with somebody who can help you untangle that little bit for you.
Yes, and we do change, you know, things change as well. It's a comment that I've seen quite often. You know, yeah, I did keto a while back last year and was doing really well, and for whatever reason they've gone off plan and they've come back to it and it's not working the same way this time, and you know, the first response is, you know, what am I doing wrong? But like you say, it's a case of looking, well, what else is going on this time that was different from last time? What are those pieces of the puzzle that are missing that,
yes,
are stopping it working so well this time?
And I guess my only other one from a practical point of view is just to beware the carb creep, because I do know that carbs do create carb cravings. I've experienced that in myself, and there have been times where I've sort of said to myself, oh yes, I'm being compliant and, you know, I'm having 90% dark chocolate and I'm having blah, blah, blah. But then quite often I'll find actually by the time I've had my 90% dark chocolate and my whole pile of raspberries and my whole pile of something else that's technically compliant, over several days, this isn't just a one-off, but, you know, it might be over a while, I've realized that I'm really needing all of these carbs, and it, for today, for example, is my cutoff day. I've had to say to myself, you know what, you can't have the chocolate every night anymore. It's not a treat anymore. It's just part of your diet. So time to cut it away for a while and reintroduce it as a treat.
Yes, there's definitely a tipping point, isn't there? And Yeah, chocolates. Chocolate's a great example. It just does become a habit every day. And I think a real good test for that, if you have been having it as that treat every day and it's delicious and it's something you look forward to, but it's just to say, okay, well, today I'm not going to have any and see how I feel about that. And if you start climbing up the walls, then, you know, it's something that maybe, like you say, you need that reset day.
Rest.
Okay, we're going to stop doing that for a while.
Yes. Good. And because I have spent 2 hours talking to you, I haven't even thought about it.
that's another good tip, isn't it? Find other distractions.
Distraction.
Well, it's been wonderful talking to you today. I've really enjoyed meeting you both and finding out more about the lives of fantastic GPs.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, well, I hope it's been helpful.
And I have enjoyed the chat immensely.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
To get the resources and links from the show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. If you fancy joining me on this exciting adventure and want to help me create new episodes, please go to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. It's thanks to the two keto dudes that I'm hosting this podcast. So please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. Please help other people hear about and find this podcast by reviewing the show on iTunes and Facebook. Every star and review really does help. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support means the world to me. Thank you. This week's end quote was recommended by Terry G.G. White and is from Norman Vincent Peale. Shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.